October 18th, 2025. And myself, Ajahn Kasapo, Ajahn Chenda, Tansiri Mado, Tanjino, Tanhimoko, we're heading out to Thailand tomorrow. So I'm looking forward to this. I don't know if this has been done before, where we take a group of Abhayagiri monks on an international trip. So Thailand and then India. And it's been in the works, planning for a long time, and it's actually happening. And the reason we do this is going to India, to the holy sites, to pay respects to the four main holy sites of the Buddha. But then there's also sub-holy sites within that, and the places associated with the life of the Buddha, where the Buddha was born, where the Buddha was enlightened, where the Buddha gave his first teaching, where the Buddha eventually passed away. And to see these sites and then imagine what it may have been like to be there in the time of the Buddha when those events were happening, to try to imagine what it would be like for the Buddha to become awakened and what it would be like to witness, to bear witness to the days leading up to the Buddha's passing away and so on. So these places can be very, very inspiring. This is Buddha Nusati, and it's very good to be able to pay respects to these places at least once in our lifetime. And to be able to pay respects to these places even once is considered great merit. And it's part of our building of parami. And you need a certain amount of merit even to be able to get to these places, to be able to do this. So we're packing our bags. Many of us, our bags are packed and we're ready to go. And we will take off actually a little bit earlier than originally stated. Take off at 5:15 tomorrow morning in order to make sure everything is as timely and leisurely at the airport that I would like it, hope it to be. And also this coming period of time when we're away, it'll be a bit more quiet at the monastery, less live streamed talks. Some of the more junior members of the community will be giving guidance just to the community here, but we won't be live streaming most of the talks. It'll be a bit more of a quiet period in that sense. And we'll have Ajahn Suhajo coming back on the 27th, I believe, just for a period of time before he heads out to Thailand. And actually, there's a very good team looking after the India trip. So this is something that I myself have masterminded for the last few years, hoping and making aspirations to do a pilgrimage like this or to lead a pilgrimage like this. But also we have a very strong team, and I'm not really worried at all about how it's going to play out, how it's going to pan out. And just feel like if I can facilitate, if myself and the team that's helping lead this pilgrimage can facilitate people being able to pay respects to these four holy sites, then our job is done. Whatever happens extra to that is just like icing on the cake. It's Debbie's birthday today, so we're collecting cake, icing on the cake. And anything extra, whatever meditation we do, whatever good acts we do, acts of generosity, and so on during this pilgrimage, the main focus is just to be able to pay respects to these different holy sites and recollect the Buddha's life at these different sites. So I brought a photo down from my kutietsa of Master Shu Yun. I've had this since I was in Anagarika, but it may well be the Buddha. We can imagine it's the Buddha. This is a photo of the Buddha. Master Hua wrote some verses about Master Shu Yun, but they may have well been written about the Buddha, because these verses completely apply to the Buddha, so I thought I would read them for the sake of inspiration and getting us thinking about the level of barami that a being has to have to become a Buddha. It says, "In the past, he fostered the roots of virtue, and so his way mind was resolute. Leaving home as a pure youth, he traveled everywhere seeking good teachers. With bones made of steel and stone, he forged ahead with vigorous momentum. With Vajra will and resolve, he boarded the Prajnapot of patience. He taught and transformed living beings using profound wisdom. He propagated the Buddha Dhamma and entered great Nibbana. Everyone in the cosmos gazes up at him in earnest admiration. His renown lives on through the ages, illuminating heaven and earth. So I think that also reminds me of Longpa Pisano talking about the Buddha as a game changer for world history and teacher of gods and humans, the enlightened one, the blessed one. In the chanting we do every day, we are recollecting the Buddha, but do we really get a sense of the Buddha, of the breadth and magnitude of the Buddha's barami, and how all-pervasive it is in our lives as practitioners, and truly illuminating heaven and earth? And even just things like the beginning of the chanting, Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Arahang, and so on. Arahang Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Bhutang Bhagavantang Abhivadayami. So just these, paying homage to the enlightened one, the blessed one, the one who was enlightened by himself, and the Dhamma taught by the blessed one, the Sangha, the blessed one's disciples. So there's how, whatever level we are able to tap into the Barami of the Buddha, then, I mean, we're all here, so that we all feel something when we think about it, or when we, it's drawn us all here in different ways, whether we've ordained or whether we're just here as a guest, or whether we're someone who comes to the monastery regularly, then for us, it's going to have slightly different meanings, slightly different ways that the Buddha's Barami has drawn us to the monastery. But for all of us, there is something there. There's something powerful there that's brought us all together to practice. And we do have to have enough faith and confidence to see that there is some sort of efficacy to picking up the practice and to actually trying to fulfill the teaching of the Buddha. And so when we cultivate faith, the word is saddha, and we translate that, that's normally translated as faith, sometimes as confidence. In Thai, they say luum sai, which means like clear trust, clear confidence. So faith is also a faculty. So these five faculties, faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom, these five faculties are said to be necessary to overcome the five hindrances to meditation. The five hindrances being the hindrance of sensuality, the hindrance of ill will, hindrance of sloth and torpor, hindrance of restlessness and remorse, and the hindrance of skeptical doubt. And so these five faculties, we think about saddha is what leads to virya, virya being energy, and that sense of striving. So we need to have confidence in something if we're actually going to put energy into it. We need to believe it to a certain extent to put effort into it. So if we believe in the practice, or we have faith in the efficacy of following the Noble Eightfold Path, then we will put it into practice, and we will, the effort we put into it will be proportionate to the amount of trust we have in it, the amount of faith and confidence we have in it. And so saddha as a faculty is a factor of how it's going to go for us. And a lot of the time we might feel like, well, I want to know first. I need to know it's going to work, or else I'm going to be wasting my time. I need to know that this practice is going to work, or else what's the point of even trying? So that's, of course, the great benefit, the great blessing of having the Kruba Ajahns in Thailand. Great examples, Longpo Cha, Longpo Liam, Longpo Samedo, and our own teachers that we know, especially for me, people like of the newer generation. So people like Longpo Liam, Longpo Anan, Longpo Dan. So these are great, shining, sterling examples of those who have walked the path. And that's, for me, I think that's enough to develop a sense of confidence. That's enough to be able to put energy into the practice. But still, there might be that part of us that thinks, well, I need to know that it's going to work. How do I know? How do I have that guarantee? And that's the unfortunate part. There is no guarantee. The guarantee comes when we develop saddha, when we develop faith as a faculty. And so we think, well, I want the guarantee first before I'm going to believe in it. But the belief in it is what creates the guarantee. So the belief in it, the faith, the trust in the practice is what creates the guarantee in the practice. And so Lompur Pasano, again, I can quote him again as saying that it's wisdom that can take you to the edge, but it's faith that actually leaps off. Wisdom can take you to the edge, but it's faith that actually propels you into liberation. And so this is very interesting, because what is it then? What is that quality of heart that will lead us along that path? So it's also, saddha is also a heart quality. There's a quality of courageousness attached to it. We could perhaps translate it, saddha, as trust, or even settled trust. Word shuddha in Sanskrit is the same root as shramana or samana, which means the one who seeks peace. So it has a feeling tone of peace to it as well. It's not kind of a fanatical faith. It's a peaceful, settled sense of trust. So I prefer these days, I mean, I'm always shifting and changing around this, but I prefer to translate saddha as settled trust, because it's settled in terms of peace, and it's also settled in terms of things. It's settled. I've decided it's settled. Settled trust. And then there's this sense of energy, and energy is that which brightens the mind. And you could think of it as a fire of virtue burning in the heart and in the mind. And when we have energy and we put energy into the cultivation of the wholesome, the mind can become very bright. The mind can be uplifted and bright and light. And we will no longer be heavy-hearted. Things will be light and spacious. And with that sense of brightness and energy, it takes energy to cultivate mindfulness. So mindfulness, sati, that has a sense of recollectedness to it, or recollection, memory. In some places, it's even translated as memory. Some people have translated it that way. It can be more like a recognition. So energy is very helpful for the cultivation of sati, of mindfulness. And what is mindfulness? Mindfulness is just that reminder. We actually just think and remind ourselves what we're supposed to be doing at any given time. And what we're supposed to be doing at any given time is cultivating sampajanya, or that sense of clear knowing and awareness. So sati and sampajanya go together. But it's not always clearly defined. What is sati? It's not always clear. Sometimes it's defined in so many different ways. And sati is just really that recollection of what we should be giving rise to, what wholesome quality we should be cultivating at any given moment. And one of the epithets of the arhant is that the arhant is one who is always mindful. So that there's also a sense of energy attached to that. And then the samadhi, sati, the samadhi comes out of the sati, the unification of mind, the mental steadiness, the firm establishing of the mind is the sati. It comes out of the sati. And then the panya, the wisdom, or the dynamic recognition of what's the skillful response in any given situation. So we talk a lot about letting go. It's not always clear what it means, this letting go, to mentally let go of something. Yes, it has a sense of dropping something, of moving on from something. But also, when the mind drops something or lets go of something, it's just going to go somewhere else. It's just going to grab onto something else. So is that really letting go? And letting go, in terms of panya, the cultivation of wisdom and discernment, it's more like skillful response. It's a skillful, the ability to skillfully respond to any situation. And that's when the Buddha talks about the mind like water, where the mind, there's the mind like stone, the mind like dirt, and the mind like water. Mind like stone, somebody does or says something hurtful or unpleasant to us, and it makes an etch in the stone. It's a very long time before that disappears. It stays for a very long time. One holds on to, say, the resentment or the grudge for a very long time based on that unpleasantness that happened to us. Mind like dirt is like a line drawn in the dirt. and that disappears in time with the wind, with the rain, and so on. And so, like, something unpleasant happens, somebody does or says something hurtful to us, then it, just with time, we're able to drop it, we're able to move on from that. And then, of course, the mind like water, which is, if you draw a line on water, it disappears as you're drawing it. And so that's like where the story I've told a couple times in the past few months of Venerable Sariputta giving forgiveness to the monk who hit him, the monk who punches him. So a monk had developed a grudge against Venerable Sariputta and punches him, and then later on is stricken with remorse and asks forgiveness. And this is the origin story of our forgiveness ceremony that we do. And he goes to ask forgiveness from Venerable Sariputta, and Venerable Sariputta says, I was forgiving you as you were punching me. My mind was forgiving you as you were hitting me. But if I have done anything, so yes, of course I forgive you, but also if I have done anything that was hurtful toward you or inappropriate, then I also ask your forgiveness. So that one is the mind, Sariputta, Venerable Sariputta, illustrating what a mind like water is like, and also illustrating this incredible humility of also asking forgiveness. And he doesn't really need to do that, but because humility was part of his ingrained nature at that point, then it was only natural for him to also ask for forgiveness from this wayward monk who had hit him. So the panya, the discernment, is skillful response. And when we develop these five faculties, then the mind can be uplifted, brightened by them, become very, very clear. They can also be thought of as, the Buddha talks about indriya sangwara, or balancing the faculties. Then we can see it as a kind of sati, as the fulcrum in the center of these five faculties. And so that sati, mindfulness, is in the center. And then on one side is faith and energy, on the other side is concentration and wisdom, and that these all need to be brought into balance. So you have on opposite ends of the spectrum, you have the settled trust and the wisdom discernment on these opposite ends. These need to be in balance. If we have too much trust or too much faith, then we'll just believe anything we hear. If we have too much on the panya side, will be overly skeptical, not really believe anything. And then you have on one side, you have energy, and then on the other, you have samadhi, then the settledness of the mind. And those need to be in balance. If there's too much energy, the mind could be too bubbly, too shaky, buzzing, too much of a buzz in the mind with too much energy. So it needs to be balanced by the samadhi, by the settling. If there's too much settling, that could lead into dullness, lead into drowsiness. And so the energy needs to bring it back into balance. And then mindfulness is in the center. So mindfulness is what's used to bring these five faculties into balance. Again, mindfulness is that which, it's where we remind ourselves of what is appropriate to do at any given moment. So it's the mindfulness that's going to be able to see, how's the energy, how's the samadhi, and so on. And using that mindfulness as the fulcrum, then it's bringing these faculties into balance. So coming back to Buddha Nusati, and these are things that are taught by the Buddha. When we talk about saddha, it's also this really, really strong confidence in the Buddha and in the teachings of the Buddha. And where we will begin is in Bodhgaya. And without the Buddha's enlightenment, none of this comes about. None of the other holy sites really mean anything. It's because the Prince Siddhartha Gautama sat under the Bodhi tree and reached liberation from all suffering. It's only because of that that we have everything that we have all these teachings, that we have this ability to ordain, that we have this life that we can lead. How many ways has the Buddha rid us of unwholesome qualities, and how many ways has the Buddha really gotten us to cultivate wholesome qualities? It's unbelievable. It's incredible. It's incredible when we think about it. So I will, myself and the group who are going, will take leave of everybody here, and just wanted to leave you all with some short reflections before we go, and to say sadhu and anumodana to everybody who does so many good things here in the monastery, and for those who are staying back, then you can look forward to a bit more of a quiet time in the monastery, hopefully. I will be contactable if anything unusual happens. I was looking for the right word. If anything not okay happens. But there is the Buddha's Barami is here. The Buddha is helping to look after this place for sure. And one of the reasons we go to these places is to also to keep that connection with the source and ask that it helps us here, ask that it helps us to continue to cultivate our practice in this place at Abhayagiri. You know, we don't go and live in Bodh Gaya. Oh, yeah, that would be horrible. Ajahn Ashulo calls it Mara's revenge, because that was, you think of the Bodhi tree, it's also where the Buddha did battle with the hordes of Mara, or where they came to attack him and the arrows flying at him and turning into flowers through the power of the metta, the power of the Barami. And so, but you think, well, now all these people are going to Bodh Gaya to practice, so you got Mara's revenge now, trying to get back at people there. So we will go for a short, it's good to go for a short period of time and really hone in on the practice, and it is a really amazing feeling there. But there are difficult aspects to it, which all of us will, I don't need to talk about them here, but all of us will experience that. And like Ajahn Kasavo mentioned this morning, we can't really know until we just take that leap of faith and go and do it. So I'll leave that for reflection this evening.